Welcome, investors, to the Absolute Return Podcast, your source for stock market analysis, global macro musings, and hedge fund investment strategies. Your hosts, Julian Climaczko and Michael Kesslering, aim to bring you the knowledge and analysis you need to become a more intelligent and wealthier investor. This episode is brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Absolute Return Podcast. I'm your host, Julian Climaczko. I'm joined by my co-host, Mike Kesslering. And on today's podcast, we welcome special guest, Ben Cohn, CEO of Playboy, one of the largest and most recognizable lifestyle brands in the world. Playboy recently went public through a merger with SPAC Mountain Crest Acquisition and currently trades under the symbol PLBY. On today's podcast, Ben discusses how Playboy transformed from a magazine company to a licensing and branded product-focused consumer lifestyle platform, the company's approach to M&A, key insights into the merger with SPAC Mountain Crest Acquisition, Playboy's growth opportunities, and why investors should consider PLBY stock, and more. So with no further ado, here's our discussion with Playboy CEO, Ben Cohn. Welcome, Ben, to the Absolute Return Podcast. A pleasure to have you on the show today. Going to talk about all things Playboy. Wow, what an absolute iconic brand. When everyone thinks of Playboy, they think of the bunny, Hugh Hefner, the Playboy Mansion. So certainly a very storied history behind the company. But you know, under your ownership, under your guidance, Playboy has become completely different. Gone are the yesteryears of this magazine that perhaps you wouldn't want your mom catching you looking at when you're a teenager. But funny thing is, for this podcast, I got to joke that it was the first time I got to look at Playboy for research purposes. But I digress. I wanted to start off by having you walk us through the Playboy story from soup to nuts and how you really transformed this into a completely different entity, basically a magazine company, now to a consumer lifestyle platform. How did you do that, and what were the key building blocks and milestones?
Great. Well, first, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Look, I think Playboy was so misunderstood in the market. It's one of the largest pieces of IP. That rabbit head is recognizable everywhere in the world, right? Today, it's a brand that drives $3 billion of global consumer spend. Products are sold in 180 countries. And so when I think about how iconic that is today and that awareness today, that to me is something worth billions and billions of dollars, right? Last week, I said to someone, if I gave you the opportunity to buy the Nike swoosh,
right,
what would you pay for that? Forget about the business model for a second. And I believe that's what we're sitting on here. But what's so interesting about this brand, and I'll talk about the transformation from that of a magazine to that of a lifestyle, which I actually don't really think was a transformation. And I'll touch on that. What's so interesting is how many different product categories this brand can play in, because it represents personal freedoms. And so it's anything from marijuana to, you know, taking our existing subscription products and modifying those and turning those into creator-led platforms. But look, this brand was started in 1953 by Hugh Hefner. And I think what he really started back in 1953 was the original lifestyle brand. This was a brand that people wore on their cufflinks, right? So the first product the company ever sold were a pair of cufflinks. It was the mansion. It was the big bunny, N950PB, the tail symbol. It was the illusion of what was behind the gate or behind the door. It was the Playboy clubs. You know, this company at one point had the most profitable casino per foot in the world in Mayfair in London. And so I think a lot of people in the domestic market in the U.S. thought about this company as a magazine. They thought that was the company. And I would make an argument that when we look back at the DNA of the company, and really what we took on with rebranding the business and sort of revitalizing the business that has really worked in today's audience, it was a lifestyle brand all along. I think people took what was a product in a way that the company expressed itself and said, well, it's a media and a magazine company. And there's no question, for a long time, that's what Hef cared about. It's why I didn't step in as CEO for so long, because you couldn't really evolve a company as long as you had that magazine, which had become a very dated product. I got my first copy of it, I think, when I was 13 years old from my aunt as a birthday gift. And, you know, I'm not sure my parents agreed with it, but it was a birthday gift, but I think that it was always this lifestyle component that was there. It was always this aspirational side of it. It was, you know, Hef's parties, it was Hef's plane, it was the mansion and those type of things. And I think we've been able to refocus the company, really bringing forward those things that have existed for the last 68 years, including the social causes that we fight for, those personal freedoms. I think Hef's daughter said the best, you know, my dad started Playboy, he was an editor at Esquire, but to really express his libertarian points of view. And I think those points of view that the company's fought for, whether they're LGBTQ plus issues, whether they're civil rights, whether they're freedom of sexuality and owning your own sexuality, those are as relevant today as they've been for the last 68 years. But again, this was a lifestyle brand all along. That's how we looked at it. I think the magazine had not been relevant in decades. We reached, you know, 10 times more people today through our digital channels and our own social media than the magazine ever reached. And what we've been able to do is really focus the company back on that lifestyle and then organize the business around four multi-billion dollar, fast-growing consumer segments: sexual wellness, style and apparel, beauty and grooming, and gaming and lifestyle products, you know, and products that the company has been in for 68 plus years.
I find it really interesting, the notion of revitalizing. It's like you bought this property that had exceptional bones, this brand value, and really just renovated it to become more current, you know, above and beyond the old magazine. You talk about these areas of growth that you're focusing on. What was the main driver behind this revitalization, turning it from a seemingly sunset business whose best days were behind it to a high growth entity with a bright future?
So again, I think when you think about the best days behind it, no question about it, as a single product category, the magazine, which I think a lot of people equated to the company domestically or in the United States,
right,
was the company. It wasn't. Actually, the company had gotten into licensing the brand 25, 30 years ago and had become one of the leading men's apparel brands in China. And so the domestic perception was so disconnected from actually what the business was and where consumers were spending money on it. You know, the magazine was something that I think was dated. It had not evolved. I don't think it was sensitive to the times and to what's happening in culture. You know, I have two daughters. I look at what they focus on, you know, how things have changed today. You know, I'm a feminist at heart with my wife and with my two daughters. And so I think that although Playboy isn't for everyone, I think Playboy had really been dated. And I think that the causes Playboy stood for, these personal freedoms, are relevant to everyone today in society. And so for us, it was a decision I had made actually when I took over the job as CEO, that it was time to sunset the magazine, that some of the objectification, some of the issues that had plagued this magazine and the business model around it needed to go. And we needed to refocus this company on what I really think Gen Z cares about today, which is pleasure in their lives. And so, you know, we have a very simple mission statement today, which is to create a culture where all people can pursue pleasure. You know, when I took over the company, that did not exist. The first thing I did when I took over as CEO is I put pretty much everyone in a room and I asked them what Playboy stood for. And I got a lot of different answers. And a lot of it was dated back to the magazine, which again, to me, was a product. It wasn't actually what the brand was. And so we've been able to evolve. You know, we've grown our audience considerably. We've lowered the average age of our audience by over 10 years. So 90% of our audience today digitally is under the age of 40. We've grown our female audience by 70%. And I'm, you know, lucky to be surrounded by a phenomenal team. Rachel Weber, our chief brand and strategy officer, really led the rebranding of the company, focusing the business back on what I think it was, its core DNA that existed for 68 years, left behind a lot of what I would say is areas and years or decades that we didn't want to focus on, which were the latter years of the magazine and sort of what it began to symbolize versus I think what the core DNA of the company was. It just took us a while to get there, obviously a controversial decision, but there was actually a great quote that an investor of mine sent to me the other day, which I think sort of symbolizes the decision-making of this. And this was a famous Steve Jobs quote, which is, in quoting now, "Most people never pick up the phone. Most people never call and ask. And that's what separates sometimes the people who do things from those who just dream about them. You got to act. You got to be willing to fail. You got to be willing to crash and burn. With people on the phone or starting a company, if you're afraid you'll fail, you won't get very far. And I think that symbolizes something that, you know, when I think about where the magazine was and how people thought about it, there was no business there. Consumers don't read magazines anymore. Right. And there's this misnomer, and I think this is one of the unique things about Playboy that other legacy media companies don't have, which was this was always a lifestyle brand. And so that transition to where consumers were spending money was much easier. If you're Vanity Fair or Vogue or these others, very hard to take a traditional legacy business if you haven't been a lifestyle business and transform that product into something else. And so people have this misnomer that I can take print content and transform it to digital content. And the answer is it just doesn't work. And so our decision was to focus on the digital, focus on the audience, where people are consuming content, shut down the magazine. We've shut down other things within the magazine too. You know, we are no longer shooting Playmates. We're rethinking that franchise and really moving away from that objectification to something that can be a consumer product business by women, for women moving forward. Rachel brought in a largely female team. I thought always if we could tell this story from a female point of view that versus a male point of view, that would really expand our addressable market. But more importantly than that, it would make the brand relevant for today's day and age. And it was something that was needed in society, which is owning your own sexuality.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest-growing alternative investment solution providers, with a suite of institutional-caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund, symbol ARB on the TSX, is the world's first SPAC-focused ETF, with a diversified portfolio of SPAC and merger arbitrage opportunities in an easy-to-use, low-cost ETF. The Accelerate Arbitrage Fund ETF trades under the symbol ARB on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
So this lifestyle transition really has translated into your financials, as in fiscal year 2020, you are projecting revenue growth of 68% and EBITDA growth of over 100%. And so when you're looking at what's driving that growth, What has been the main driver of this pretty substantial growth in this turnaround?
Yeah, so I think the numbers we're referring to are for the calendar year that ended December 31st, 2020. So we actually raised our guidance once. So we were originally projecting $131 million of revenue for the year. When we raised our $50 million pipe, we raised that to $137 million. We actually came in at $148 million for the year. And what led that, I think, is the acceptance of the brand. So we've seen unbelievable traction with Gen Z. We don't have an influencer program today. We don't pay influencers to wear the brand. But we saw influencers all over TikTok wearing Playboy. We saw our streetwear business with PacSun and Misguided exceed $100 million in sales. That's up 15 times since 2018. So unbelievable growth there. We saw our licensing business grow 20%. And then our D2C business, which really did not exist in 2019, achieved $64 million of revenue last year. And again, it's the pivoting of this business model. You know, what's truly unique about it is that there's already $3 billion to spend. And so when I think about how do I grow this company, you know, not only am I going to grow our addressable market and grow consumer spend against the brand with some exciting new products we have, but what led to this is a combination of that growth in sales. So we've moved from number 40 or so in the world as the top brand to number 17 last year. But it's also the D2C strategy. And there's a ton of room left there. Most of our licensing business today, we get 4 to 5 cents on the dollar. And so I believe there's a true opportunity to increase that to 100 cents on the dollar. Now, margin profiles will change, but again, for example, if you're only working for 4 to 5 cents on the dollar with PacSun and Misguided, and there's $100 million of sales, you're only booking $5 million of revenue at the end of the day. There's a brand cost against that, right? Because brands are living and growing organisms, and you have to constantly reinvest in brands. If I can take that $100 million of revenue versus $5 million of revenue and spread the same brand costs against that, well, that's a much more profitable business. And not only that, I have a revenue business that is, you know, multiples of where we are today. If I could achieve those $100 million in revenues that PacSun and this guy are achieving. And that opportunity exists all over the world. You know, in 2020, we did over $1 billion of e-commerce revenue in China alone.
Aside from this organic growth that you're seeing, whether it be to direct-to-consumer licensing, you do have an approach to M&A, which you discuss, can further accelerate your growth, utilize significant net operating losses to provide a tax shield. What's your approach to M&A, and how will it ultimately drive shareholder value?
Look, so my career, maybe that's where we should start a little bit. I've spent the last 25 years in private equity. We did two things when we started Risby Traverse. We bought controlling interests in some of the most iconic entertainment assets. So we owned ICM, which is a talent agency. We owned Summit Entertainment, which was the film studio behind the Twilight franchises. We owned a great music licensing company called CSAC. We bought Playboy. We had also taken very large minority stakes in pre-IPO tech companies. So when Twitter went public, we were the largest investor in Twitter. We invested in Facebook, Snapchat, Square, SpaceX, Instacart, et cetera. And so I had a vision all along when I left private equity and to step into Playboy, which was to actually do what I had done previously, but to do it in a corporation format or C-Corp format, where I could actually realize the synergies between these great companies we were buying. So for Playboy, given this tax shelter, and Liberty was sort of, Liberty Media, John Malone, and Greg Fane was sort of the example.
For sure.
For Playboy, I believe M&A comes in to help us accelerate our organic growth. So as we're transitioning this business model, you know, from that of what was a media company and that of a licensing business to this fast-growing consumer product company, there are certain skill sets that we need to bring in. Now, either I can hire those or I can acquire those. Why I like acquiring them is not only am I buying a business that is hopefully profitable, that has a new brand or a brand by itself, but I'm also able to take that skill set and use that for Playboy or other Playboy-branded products. And so a great example of that is Yandy. Yandy is a company we bought December 31st, 2019. So unfortunately, I ruined New Year's for a few of my team members. But it worked out really well. You know, we grew that business considerably in 2020. But more importantly, I bought an e-com infrastructure that I did not have before.
Right.
And so Playboy historically didn't do anything for e-com for the most part. And so with that, not only was I able to buy Yandy in a very profitable way and grow that business last year, bringing in some expertise to help it, but I was able to leverage that infrastructure for Playboy. Same thing with Lovers, which we just bought. So Lovers is a sexual wellness omni-channel retailer. So 41 stores plus an e-commerce business. We actually tested Lovers products or products that similar products that Lovers sells in 2020 on Yandy to great success. So it wasn't by accident that we bought Lovers. We knew that our existing email and active customer base at Yandy had an interest in these products. There was a high conversion rate. We tested it with very few SKUs to great success in 2020. Now that we have Lovers, we can go back and target the right customers in that email list with a full set of Lovers products. The reverse also happens for Lovers, which is 20% of Lovers' historical revenue were lingerie sales. Now, again, very few SKUs. Now I can take their customer base and market Yandy to them. And then on top of all of that, we're cross-selling these products at Playboy. So Playboy historically did not sell products. We started selling Halloween costumes to great success. One of the best parties at Playboy was always the Halloween party. Mm. We started selling Halloween costumes in 2020. We'll continue to do that this year. And then we launched Playboy Lingerie to great success on Yandy last year. We did two drops. It sold out basically almost immediately. And that has led us this year to now thinking about launching our own lingerie line moving forward for Playboy or for Playmates that we're really excited about because we know there is a propensity from customers to buy already.
And you mentioned spending the majority of your career in private equity prior to stepping into the CEO role at Playboy in 2017. I was wondering, how was that transition going from buyouts investments to an operating role, and what would be some keys to success that helped you become successful as CEO?
Look, I was fortunate through my private equity career to work with great management teams and learn a lot from them. And, you know, I think it was something actually my grandfather taught me all along, which is there's two types of CEOs. There's CEOs that think they know everything. And there's CEOs that think they should surround themselves with the best people they can hire at the time and make informed decisions based on what those people's expertise are. And I'm part of the latter group. And so that's how I've tried to, you know, model my career after. It's how I try to run the company. I am constantly looking to hire the best talent I can hire because they're much smarter than I am in a lot of these areas, and I can make the best informed decision by that. But the transition, I think, has gone relatively smoothly. You know, Playboy was a company that we basically rebuilt from the ground up. It's something I had done in private equity previously. But I think what I brought to the team and to the company is that private equity deal set or mindset. You know, especially for a business that was so heavily dependent upon licensing, every licensing deal in my mind is a mini M&A deal, right? You're entering, you're getting into bed with someone, no pun intended with Playboy, but you're getting into bed with someone that is now the store to your brand. They're taking your brand and they're developing product, and you really need to think strategically long term about what that looks like. And, you know, what are the pitfalls? What do you have to be careful of? And so I think I've brought that discipline to the team. And I believe that I've learned from them and they've learned from me. And I think that this clear vision and willing to make bold decisions, I think, is the other thing. You know, that's something that we've done in private equity before. Is sometimes you have to make the unpopular decision. I'm okay being the unpopular person sometimes, making tough business decisions like shutting down the magazine, because you see the potential long term for what the business can become or this brand can become. And look, I think, you know, it's worked. We have some really interesting things in the pipeline coming up. You know, I said last week we're going to enter the NFT market space. We're going to leverage a 70-year catalog we have. You know, this is a thing I've always thought about in my career. Is I'm a big believer in IP, because people smarter than us will figure out new ways to monetize great IP.
Yep.
I gave an example this weekend to someone about the movie studios. You know, when I first deal I did when I moved to Los Angeles was I bought a talent agency called ICM. Well, at that time, DVDs were all the rage. No one even knew of what streaming was, right? Streaming did not exist. But what happens is people smarter than us figure out that now all of a sudden I can reach a consumer through a streaming service, and you continue to re-monetize this IP. And I think that's what's happening with NFTs. And I think as an owner of, you know, something that I think is worth billions of dollars, that will continue to happen in the future. The people out there will spend a lot of money. They'll figure out new ways to monetize old IP, and we'll be the beneficiary of that moving forward. But we have opportunities to, you know, evolve our subscription products into creator-led content platforms, i.e., a Patreon or an OnlyFans. We have had a long history advocating for the legalization of marijuana in the United States, I know, which is legal in Canada. It's something that we plan to actively be in once it is federally legal in the United States and there's banking law reform. And so there's just a ton on the plate. We're trying to stay very focused right now on growing our D2C business and our sexual wellness business and taking back parts of our style and apparel. But the runway in front of us is really endless moving forward. And I think, you know, using my private equity skills, we can bring really interesting partnerships to the table to help us expand into those areas.
I love the idea of the NFT that's really utilizing the tremendous brand value to expand in new growth areas. And NFTs are just this sort of new asset class that's become super popular in the last couple months, and definitely a huge opportunity there. But something specifically I wanted to touch on from a deal-making perspective, Playboy, newly public company, trading under the symbol PLBY, went public via SPAC, struck the deal in October, Mountain Crest Acquisition. The deal was at a $400 million enterprise value and included a $50 million PIPE financing at 10 bucks a share. Your stock has done super well since then, up over 60% from that $10 PIPE financing. Can you walk us how this deal came to fruition?
Sure. So my introduction to SPACs actually started about 4 years ago. There's a guy named Harry Sloan, yep, Jeff Saginski, and Eli Baker behind the Double Eagle SPACs. And I've known Harry for a long time, going back to when I bought ICM, and he was the CEO of MGM.
Yeah, they did the DraftKings deal, right?
They've done DraftKings, they've done Skills. Yep. I think the world of them. Harry actually invested in the pipe as part of this. But about 4 years ago, they approached us and they wanted, when I was still in private equity, to take four of my companies at a time, or three of my companies at a time, merge them together into what was Double Eagle. And we would basically have a holding, a public holding company around that, where you could start to realize these synergies. Unfortunately or fortunately at the time, we had started conversations with Blackstone. Blackstone was very interested in our music licensing business called CSAC. And they ended up buying that business, which ended up killing the larger deal at the SPAC. So at that point, I stepped in full time to Playboy and said, I still wanted to embark on that same strategy. I was just going to do it with Playboy as the cornerstone, given its global reach and how big this brand is globally. And so we had, turned around Playboy, unbelievable growth. But we've done it in a completely capital-starved environment, right? I've had no capital to invest in the company previously. And when you have a business that has as much growth potential as Playboy does, very, very hard to grow when you don't have capital to make the right investments. So you're making short-term decisions versus the right long-term decisions. And so my goal when I had stepped into Playboy was to always take the company back as a public company. I wanted to have, and especially with my M&A skill, I wanted to have the most flexible capital structure. Can I have a structure that has cash, that has equity, that could borrow money, although I'm not as big a fan of leverage anymore as I was in private equity as an operator. But really having that flexible capital structure to take advantage of the opportunities that I know exist in the marketplace from a deal perspective. And so what was truly unique about Mountain Crest was that it was a SPAC that didn't have any warrants outstanding. So one of the issues in a lot of these SPACs is this massive warrant overhang that exists.
Right.
And so Mountain Crest had a tenth of a right that automatically converted into stock at the de-SPACing transaction. And I was also able to structure a deal where I could buy back, or the company bought back, half of the sponsor's promote. So the overall dilution that we were absorbing was very little. And, for us, we thought we were, doing the deal very cheaply, but we needed the money to grow the company. And I think we'll be able to accelerate our growth moving forward, even after a great year like last year. And so we looked at this as a capital raise. No, none of my investors were selling. I wasn't selling. Insiders or existing investors plus management own about 66% of the company today. My investors saw the vision. They're here for the long term. And this was a capital raise transaction. And so, look, I could sit here and debate with you what the value of the company is. I think we are completely undervalued today. I still think there's a big portion of the market that is missing it. But, long-term investors decide what the valuation of the business is. I don't, as a management team. What I can control as the CEO and as our management team is that we constantly deliver on our results. And hopefully over time, we continue to raise the growth prospects of the company. And if we do that and we execute, I hope investors long-term will reward us with the valuation that I feel is appropriate. But again, I look back and I go, what's the value of the Nike Swoosh? What's the value of the Rabbit Head today on a global basis for a brand that generates $3 billion of spend? I could look at my two revenue streams and come up with a valuation, putting my private equity hat on, that is well in excess of where we trade today. But again, I don't want to presume that. That's up to the investors and the marketplace to decide what the value of this is long term.
We'll get into the stock and the marketplace shortly, but prior to that, I want to talk about growth opportunities. So you're currently focused on four major markets: sexual wellness, style and apparel, gaming and lifestyle, and beauty and grooming. Where do you see Playboy, say, in the next 5-10 years, and what's going to help get you there?
So again, we want to stay really focused on these four markets. What's unique about these four markets is how big they are from a product perspective inside of each of these markets. And so, this is a company that's built with singles and doubles. It's not built that we have one product and it either works or it doesn't work. It's a portfolio-based approach, right? It's our partnerships with microgaming and Scientific Games, to our streetwear deals. From a growth perspective, I think there's two areas that we're really focused on, right? First is expanding our direct-to-consumer business, which I believe we can increase the average order size and lifetime value of our customers over time if we become the e-commerce platform where customers transact through. So tons of growth in our apparel business. There's tons of growth in our sexual wellness business. I think, when you think about the history of this company and maybe how some people perceive it, you would think sexual wellness is right down the middle of the fairway for us. It is a category that's $240 billion industry today. It's projected to grow to $400 billion by 2024. It's everything from bedroom accessories to lingerie to condoms, et cetera. I think on a global basis, this company can become the market leader in that. And so we're very focused on that. And then there's a lot of ancillary recurring revenue streams that we can build off the back of that. And so I just brought in Lance Barden from Match Group as my CFO, really thrilled to have him as a partner here. But, you know, we talk a lot about, are there, you know, not necessarily in dating apps, but are there relationship apps? Are there other recurring revenue streams that we can give people advice on, whether it be on relationships or sex advice? And are there things that you can build on the back of sexual wellness? And I think, you know, an example I think is Nike. That's done this unbelievably well. They've moved to a D2C model and they're building apps out to engage their consumer more and more. So you think about Nike running and Nike training. Our model is very similar to that. And then within each of those categories, you know, there's NFTs emerge, cannabis emerges. There's a real opportunity for us to continue to expand in gaming. Again, it will be a licensed business. You know, and then lastly, our beauty and grooming category we're not in today. We know consumers will spend money against the brand in that category. We've just started incubating our own color cosmetics business and then very focused on men's grooming as well. So again, we're trying to stay very organized. We're trying to stay very strategic in, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 to 4 and how we go about executing it. But the real thing going forward is that runway, because of how this brand is perceived in each of these categories, is really endless. And I think it's going to be a really interesting combination of D2C sales coupled with interesting recurring revenue streams that we can build on the back of that, not only on the digital apps, but also subscriptions as well. And then thinking about, you know, how do we take, you know, what is left, our last legacy product, which is our subscription sites, and can we turn those into creator-led content platforms, you know, i.e. an OnlyFans or a Patreon that you can use to then market your consumer products to as well.
And now a word from our sponsor, Accelerate, one of Canada's most innovative and fastest growing alternative investment solution providers. With a suite of institutional caliber alternative ETFs for investors seeking diversification and long-term performance, the Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF, symbol 1C, ONEC on the TSX, is Canada's first alternatives portfolio solution, providing exposure to 6 alternative asset classes, 10 alternative strategies, in one easy-to-use, one-choice ETF that charges a management fee of just 0.2%. The Accelerate One Choice Alternative Portfolio ETF trades under the symbol 1C, ONEC, on the Toronto Stock Exchange. Find out more at accelerateshares.com.
So obviously there's a ton of growth opportunities within the 4 segments that you have. When you are looking at some of the M&A opportunities, looking at each of the segments relatively, which one of those segments would you say are really posing some attractive acquisition candidates in the future for you?
Yeah, so specifically with M&A, again, one, does the deal make economic sense? And two, is there a strategic rationale for doing this? Because I don't want to do a deal, you know, going back to my private equity days, it's just great on paper from a financial perspective. It doesn't really advance the overall ball of the company. We're very focused on the sexual wellness space. It's highly fragmented. There's big dislocation between what I believe the value of these companies are and what they can trade at and the growth prospects of them, especially as sexual wellness has become very mainstream. So, you know, as I outlined, our M&A is going to be focused on sexual wellness. We think there's real synergies that can be brought to the table as we look to expand those skill sets internally and then the overall size of that market. And again, you know, going back to Julian's question on growth, you know, in the next year or two, it's D2C sales and it's sexual wellness and starting to set the groundwork for NFTs and this other stuff. But really taking a long-term view to building anything. I'm not interested in a short-term win. as a team. You know, you don't want to enter, for example, the NFT space and have a big bump in 21. And then in 22, you're like, well, how am I going to comp against that from a revenue perspective? So everything we're doing, you know, including, you know, launching our beauty business and color cosmetics, is taking a long-term view to building things that have sustainable growth. But, you know, specifically, Michael, on the M&A side, it's sexual wellness. There's a real opportunity there. Really excited by the pipeline of deals we have. And then, you know, I think as we started, we have those $180 million of NOLs to take advantage of and shelter income through.
So, Ben, you did a great job walking us through, you know, the Playboy story, the going public transaction. You're up and trading, and it's traded phenomenally well, up over 60% from a recent $10 pipe financing. But you certainly still continue to believe there's a case for the stock. So I wanted to give you a platform to just give, you know, your quick elevator pitch to why investors should consider Playboy stock here and, you know, what the opportunity is for investors on a go-forward basis.
Yeah, my elevator pitch is really simple. We are a high growth lifestyle consumer product company organized around four key product categories that are multi-billion-dollar categories that are growing everywhere, and we monetize them through two primary ways. First is on a direct-to-consumer basis, where we already have a fan base or a customer base of 50 million people we reach every day that we can market to. And second is through licensing in international territories where we don't have the expertise today to operate. It's a brand that generates over $3 billion of spend today in over 180 countries. And it's a piece of IP, really, that Rabbit had on a global basis that, in my view, is priceless. And so, you know, it's a business that grew 89% last year. And I believe that now with our new capital, we will be able to accelerate that growth moving forward. Might not all happen in 1 year. But these things take time. But these categories that we're organized around give us runway that is really endless moving forward.
Well, there you have it, folks. Prior to wrapping things up today, Ben, where can investors find out more about Playboy?
So our website would be a great place. PLBYgroup.com is our investor website. And then as well as on the SEC's website under the ticker PLBY.
Perfect. Well, Ben, I'd like to thank you for coming on the show today. Super interesting and just a great story. It's awesome to see the company really revitalized here and thriving, growing massively and expanding. So kudos to you. You've done a phenomenal job and thank you for sharing that with us today.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate you guys giving me the time.
All right. Wish you the best of luck. Cheers.
Thanks for tuning in to the Absolute Return Podcast. This episode was brought to you by Accelerate Financial Technologies. Accelerate, because performance matters. Find out more at accelerateshares.com. The views expressed in this podcast are the personal views of the participants and do not reflect the views of Accelerate. No aspect of this podcast constitutes investment, legal, or tax advice. Opinions expressed in this podcast should not be viewed as a recommendation or solicitation of an offer to buy or sell any securities or investment strategies. The information and opinions in this podcast are based on current market conditions and may fluctuate and change in the future. No representation or warranty, expressed or implied, is made on behalf of Accelerate as to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Accelerate does not accept any liability for any direct, indirect, or consequential loss or damage suffered by any person as a result of relying on all or any part of this podcast, and any liability is expressly disclaimed.